We recently learned how the consolidation of the poultry industry into a few giant companies has turned chicken farmers into serfs with a mortgage. The thought of what kind of chickens they have to offer leads us to ask, where can we find food with its farmer's face on it?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1239th edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Melbourne who are tuned into the Food Chain podcast at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, in the 1234th edition of the Food Chain, we learned how many of the nation's poultry farmers have become serfs with mortgages to a few very large integrated companies. The farmers are called serfs with mortgages because though they may own their own land, or at least hold a mortgage on their land, they have become serfs to the giant companies that own the chickens, the chicken feed, and the market for those chickens. The farmers have little control over what chickens to grow, or how to feed them, or how to treat them. At the end of the day, many of the contract chicken farmers are left with little more than a mountain of debt they incurred in building chicken houses for their company overseers, and a mountain of chicken manure. Whatever chicken farmers decide to rebel against this system, as did Purdue farmer contract farmer Craig Watts out there in North Carolina, they're bullied back into submission by the fact they have mortgaged their land to build the chicken houses and have no other market for their chickens. So they're trapped. In thinking about what kind of chicken a serf with a mortgage farmer would likely produce for their giant corporate overseer, we got to thinking there must be a better way. And so we ask, where can we find food with its farmer's face on it? And just like that, here is a poultry farmer who proudly puts her face on the food she offers to the world. She is Heidi Diestel-Orrick, who is the CEO of Diestel Turkeys. Heidi, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Good to have you aboard. I'm going to press up the volume there a little bit. Yes, so Diestel Turkeys, you've been in family for 70 years. You know, whenever I think of turkey dinners, I think of Thanksgiving dinner, and you think of family, because it takes a family to eat a big turkey.
Yep.
And so I got to wondering, I wonder what the Diestel family eats for Thanksgiving dinner, having grown all those turkeys all year long.
We're having a turkey, for sure.
Okay, good. I thought, well, I once worked in a potato chip factory, and that pretty much doomed me for potato chips for a long time, so there you go. So, a family business, and as for as long as I can remember, I've seen the name Diestel on the turkeys.
Yep.
And they're the turkeys that always seem to end up at my house.
Mm-hmm.
And you are the fourth generation of the Diestel family, and you're raising the fifth generation and running the company.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I can't take all the credit. We have an amazing team that works with us. We're one big family over here. And my husband, Jared, is involved in the business, as well as my brother, Jason. So it's truly a family affair.
And it has been a family affair for 70 years?
Yeah, since 1949. Mm-hmm.
So how do you hold a family business together for 70 years?
That's a very big question with a lot of factors that come into play. Mm-hmm. I think a couple of the things is, you know, there's a few different factors at play. You know, I think looking at our history and our heritage, you know, we have always felt firmly about the way that we raise the turkeys, what we give them, what we don't, how we bring them to market, the quality of the product itself.
So that's kind of like a vision, right?
It's definitely.
You have a family vision here.
Yeah, it's a farming philosophy in a way that's really been handed down from generation to generation. You know, I think it's key that we maintain our respect to our heritage and to our history. That doesn't mean that we become stagnant, right? It's not that we are not innovating. It's just that we have a real respect for the fundamentals of what makes the Diestel difference the Diestel difference. And we've really stayed true to that over the many years that we've been farming. You know, the landscape of what we do, which is all natural, organic, non-GMO production. And when I say natural, I mean no antibiotics ever is kind of the baseline for entry here at Diestel. So we're not administering antibiotics to the birds. And so, you know, these are kind of our fundamentals. And, you know, right now in the Times, it's all the rage, right? It's very popular this is aligned with consumer trends, these attributes and these fundamentals. And so over the last, you know, 30 years or so, we really grew up in that natural foods industry. I mean, natural and organic food, you know, 20, 30 years ago was a much different landscape.
The Diestel family probably looked like hippies back then.
We did look like hippies back then. We got a lot of flack for looking that way, yes. Yeah, exactly. Well, and even the way that we bought our food, our meat, right? I mean, my goodness, even, you know, 100 years ago, it's night and day the way that food gets to market, any food of any category, and how we consume it, right? The types of products that we're purchasing today, the convenience meals, the ready-to-eat varietal versus, you know, 100 years ago, I mean, you know, you were buying a whole chicken and you were making four different meals with it, or a whole turkey and you were making four different meals with it.
And it still had the feathers on it.
And yeah, potentially, and maybe it was even New York dressed, right? I mean, feathers on, head on, guts in. I mean, how do you know the quality of your bird if you're not looking at all that?
There you go. Now, who laid down this family philosophy that's lasted 70 years? Where did it come from?
Yeah, so it came from our Uncle Ernest Bottini. He and his family were farming here in the Sonora area, which is where we're based out of, Sonora, California. That's our headquarters, if you will. He was farming here in the 20s, and the fundamentals of giving the turkeys the time, the space, identifying the breed, really kind of started from him. My grandpa, Grandpa Jack Diestel, his mother was a Bottini, and he grew up with Ernest and really was a farmer at heart and kind of latched on to a lot of those same philosophies. And so as he was raised and, you know, kind of brought up in the world, he decided to get a plot of land, which is literally the farm and the house I'm speaking to you from today. And he started farming. Now, he started out as a contract farmer. He would work with some of the other turkey producers in the area of his generation, and he would farm turkeys. And then he had his own Diestel turkey, right? He started the quintessential Diestel brand, if you will. And it's Grandpa Jack who really saw, you know, a vision for having our own offering and our own line of birds. And at this point, it was, you know, just seasonal. I mean, it's just turkeys. And my dad grew up with my grandpa, and, you know, he went to school, started at a junior college, and then moved on to UC Davis and met my mom there. And, you know, he was studying economics, business economics, and he thought, you know, we have something that's unique. We have this really good product, this really good turkey that his whole life he saw people coming out to the ranch, which is a 5-mile dead-end road going nowhere, to pick up their turkeys every single year. He thought, hey, can we just take this to the San Francisco Bay Area? There's plenty of people. Let's just take this whole turkey down to the peninsula. And my mom grew up on the peninsula, so she knew some of the butcher shops because, you know, back in that day, we're talking about butcher shops and natural foods were like vitamin stores. And it kind of started from there. I mean, truly, they started with a phone book, and they maintained the same principles, the no antibiotics ever, the organic. And what's really funny about this entire conversation is that today, if we walk into a grocery store, consumers are totally blindsided by so many seals of approvals and third-party audits and, you know, is it certified organic? Does it have the stamp? And we had these stamps, we had these approvals because it's our farming philosophies, but we never, you know, my parents didn't go into a butcher shop and say, these are no antibiotics ever. They went into the butcher shop and they said, hey, this product is going to taste phenomenal. It's going to have a phenomenal yield. It's going to have the texture and the flavor and the juiciness, and it's going to keep your shoppers coming back year after year after year. And the butcher shop said, okay, well, maybe, you know, you all sound a little weird, but we'll take 10. And after year, that 10 turned into 20, turned into 30. And we really just, my parents really just built this business slowly but surely into the fourth generation, which is myself and my brother. And we roped in a few, you know, non-blood diesels to keep us all sane. And we've just continued to find the value in the way that we bring our product to market and then maintained that value and the quality stance, which, you know, we're not really going to budge from. If it's got our name on it, it's going to meet our standards.
What about Heidi Diestel? I mean,
yeah.
Why didn't Heidi burn off and become a Hollywood movie star?
Oh, I tried, but they rejected me. No, I'm joking. You know, the thing
that was always the question is, how do you keep them down on the farm when they get a taste of the big city?
Yes.
And,
well,
and there's Heidi. She stayed on the farm.
Yeah, totally. I hear you. I ran away for quite some time. You know, my parents were always very adamant that if we didn't love this lifestyle, to not choose it. You know, for anyone out there who has their own farm, their own business, you know, it's going to take 150% of what you've got and then some. Your work is never done, and you have a lot of people that are relying on you to get it right. But, you know, the thing is that I went out, we got some experience, worked for other folks, you know, got an education, and this is what I realized. Our food system and the way in which food gets to market is not ideal, to say the least, to put it nicely. And in our program and with the modern technologies of today, with the direct-to-consumer marketing, the Instagrams, the Facebooks, the way in which we can connect each other, which is totally unique from the previous generation, we might have a fighting chance in keeping farms like ours and potentially other farmers, you know, that are maybe of similar size or want to become of similar size. We might just have a fighting chance to keep them alive and to bring true quality, true nutrient-dense food back into the mouths of so many people who think that what they're buying right now is good quality, and it's lacking, right? You can do organic. You can do it really well. You can do it really poorly. There's always ways to cut corners and reduce costs. And most of our grocery stores, because it's so popular to have these claims on, are finding large purveyors to say, hey,
it's organic and it came from China. It's got to be good. Folks, we're going to have to take a quick break, but this is going to be fun. We are with Heidi Diestel. She's the CEO of Diestel Turkeys. And they, I guess, invented the whole notion of real turkeys or reinvented the notion. We will be right back for lots more fun. Stay tuned.
And now, more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
So, Heidi, sometime back I received a phone call from a gentleman in Arkansas calling me up, and he said, Michael, I'm not making any money with my watermelons, Michael. And everybody says they're the world's best watermelons, Michael. Nobody grows better watermelons than I do. And I said, well, sir, how are you selling them? And he said, well, a truck comes by and picks up my watermelons and with everybody else's watermelons. And I said, well, why bother growing the world's best watermelons? Because your watermelons are only going to be as good as everybody else's watermelons. And that seems to be a message that somebody told the Distel family a long time ago when you held up that brand and as a flag. It's almost like a flag of your country and said, this is us.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah.
And so we have to fight to make this really something,
yeah.
this flag of ours, this name, our family name.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you start?
Well, yeah, it's really important because, you know, people sell to people, right? And we're farmers. And, you know, to be honest, not every single farmer wants to have a brand. Not every single farmer wants to manage all that comes with having a brand. Some farmers just flat out want to be farmers, you know?
And grow commodities.
Yeah, totally, and grow commodities. And, you know, those farmers have a place, right? We're not saying that what they do is wrong or bad. We're just saying that we are a choice, and there should be our choice. This style, the Distel Difference choice, should be on the shelf, and we should have a facing on the shelf along with the commodity players, right, in the space. And let's let the consumer vote with their food dollar. You know, that's all we're bringing to the table here. So, you know, again, for us, you know, we instilled and you know, we've talked about it endlessly on, you know, family dinner discussions and what have you. But, you know, we really had to take ownership of our story. We had to take ownership of our brand. We had to invest in marketing, which, you know, sometimes feels like a bottomless pit. And we had to maintain our presence in the market and with our consumers, right? And that's not necessarily something that's easy to do or inexpensive to do, but we needed to bring ourselves forward so that we found people and we didn't just rely on the consumer to find us. Because, again, we are turkey. We're not chicken. We're turkey. And when you think about turkey, you think about Thanksgiving. You think about maybe eating healthy, so you buy some ground turkey, and you think about maybe having a sandwich. Well, the last two are not thinking about turkey. It's thinking about, you know, other goals. You only think about turkey at Thanksgiving. So as a culture, right, we don't necessarily think of turkey as a protein that you might just put on the table on any weeknight meal. So we kind of work extra hard to get our brand out into the marketplace and to have people recognize that this is something that they want to support, that there's a family behind the brand, and really, you know, as you said, Michael, fly that flag.
Do you ever feel like you're a warrior?
I think any farmer really feels like a warrior. Yeah, I mean, I think that anyone fighting that uphill, trying to bring something that's higher priced, that has value into a marketplace that may or may not always also reciprocate the same value. Yeah, I mean, you're definitely fighting against the norm. It's not easy to be the size that we are, which to our industry, we are a pepper flake, okay? To some other farmers or CSA programs, we may be looked at and said, oh my gosh, you guys are so huge. Well, yeah, we have scale. Yes, we can reach a lot of folks. But in our industry, you know, we are just this tiny, relatively insignificant portion, but we feel like are a very valuable portion. Yeah. We're not trying to feed America. We're not trying to sell every single turkey or deli meat in the country. But for those people that want something that's truly unique, true quality, the most delicious, better for you, truly better for you from the ground up, this is the right choice for them.
Well, a peppercorn, a pepper flake, you said.
Pepper flake.
A pepper flake. You know, back in the 1960s, the federal government, the Earl Butz, the Secretary of Agriculture, stood up on a soapbox and told agriculture, get big or get out.
Mm, yeah.
Why didn't you?
Well,
I mean, there must be some interesting family history there.
Yeah, I use the word insignificant. It's the wrong word. We were in a very small niche of a program, right? We are always no antibiotic. We were always vegetarian fed. We were always certified organic. The first year you could label certified organic was in 1999, which is funny because it doesn't feel like that long ago. So, you know, we were never part of this mainstream program. We weren't a commodity to begin with.
But weren't you tempted to be? I mean, you had things going. Didn't a banker come to you and say, you know, we could lend you enough money to build this giant facility?
Yeah.
And you could get filthy rich doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, see, maybe we should have been smarter, Michael. I don't know. Maybe I wouldn't, you know, maybe I wouldn't have to hustle it every single day of my life. But no, we weren't. That it's just not part of our own values, right? It wasn't part of our it wasn't part of our goals. That wasn't our vision. We, from our family, from our core, we're just not interested in playing the big game. Sure, we need to grow. There's no doubt about that, and we have grown over the years. You know, yes, we'd love to have a bigger market share of what we do. Any business would. That's how you survive. But we're not interested in playing the commodity game. No.
Okay. There you go. We're not going to do it, and then we didn't do it, and that's that.
Yes. For better or for worse.
Okay, good. Well, and that's what I'm looking for, is food with its farmer's face on it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think once you grow beyond that, you never know what you're going to get. You know, I think of those contract farmers who are growing commodity poultry for a giant corporation, and they have no control over what they do. They don't own the chickens, they don't own the feed, they don't own the market, they don't own anything except the obligation to pay the mortgage on their chicken farm.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I feel for them, my heart goes out to them, but I'm not necessarily interested in eating their chickens.
Right.
And so what is the distal difference of which you speak?
Yeah. So we boiled it down to kind of four pillars, which is basically farm, food, family, and future. You know, starting with the farm. Again, we are farmers. We grow turkeys. We work with farmers. We work with other farmers to grow turkeys. We are farmers talking to farmers. In our perfect world, we want to bring up the next generation of farmers who care and are committed to animal welfare and environmental standards and, you know, are bringing innovation to some of our old-fashioned values so that we can have more of this type of food, more of this true quality food bringing into the market. So the farming aspect is huge, and it's one point that really, really differentiates us, right?
Well, just to interject quickly,
yeah.
It seems like the farmer in the industrial model of which I just spoke is becoming denigrated to a serf.
Well, there are definitely some instances where farmers, unfortunately, they don't get to control how they're raising their birds or what they're feeding their birds or, you know, the placement, the density of the birds in a house. Yeah, there are definitely farmers out there that maybe would prefer it to be different, but they don't have the means to make it different, to make that reality come to fruition. And again, it's about finding a brand that cares about that, to bring food to the table that is done in an appropriate way, right? In a more holistic way.
And speaking of food, that's your second F.
Yeah, so exactly. So then the food, right? Like let's talk about the taste and the quality and the texture and what's in it and what's not in it. I mean, this is a whole nother thing. So we have a farm, and then we have processing facilities, and we have worked with other processors as well, and we work with chefs, and we want to make products that taste good, that are absolutely undeniably delicious, but also, we're not filled with fillers, filled with ingredients that we can't read or pronounce. you know, filled with chemicals, so on and so forth. And so, you know, for us, we say on our website, you know, our turkeys make mama proud, and that's what we're doing. We want to bring food to the table that's absolutely delicious, but also that's nutrient dense, that's going to keep you full.
Well, okay, then the question, how do you grow good tasting turkeys full of nutrients?
Definitely. So, well, part of the nutrients and part of, you know, your quality of your nutritional panel is as much as how you raise the turkey and then also what you do when you get it to your processing facility, right? So when we're raising our birds, we really hone in on breed, feed, and time, okay? So we have a feed that is vegetarian fed. Yes, the base of it is corn and soy. We have different feed additives that, you know, add in vitamins and minerals. It's not a pelletized feed formula. It's a loose mash so that the turkeys can exude some of that natural characteristics of foraging through the feed to find those minerals and vitamins and so on and so forth. It's a very high quality feed that we feed the birds. Mm-hmm. And then the breed of the turkey. The breed of the turkey is really important. And when I say breed in poultry, you know, we don't mean, we can't use, you know, like the notion of like Wagyu beef and these types of things. Breed really comes down to that meat to bone ratio, the right size for the turkey, and growing it to maturity, which kind of delves into the time, growing that turkey to maturity so that it has developed its texture and its flavor. That's kind of how you do it.
So many turkeys now are bred for their breasts, you know, and can barely walk anymore.
Right. So for us, you know, the breed is specific to what that turkey's intended for, right? So for a very small, like we have a very small petite turkey, okay? And this turkey is going to grow for the same amount of time as a large tom, but it is fully matured at 6 to 10 pounds. So as farmers, we're going to keep the farm space, the barn space, specific for those little petite turkeys, just like we would the toms, but they're only ever going to be 6 to 10 pounds, where toms, you know, could be 30 plus pounds.
Right.
So, you know, again, it comes back to that breed and time. Now, if I was a conventional farmer or, you know, someone who needs efficiency and throughput, I'm going to be concerned about the number of pounds coming through my farming assets. And therefore, you know, I'm going to want all toms. Right? Because why would I take up the space and the energy and the feed and the labor and the overhead for these little tiny petite turkeys?
So literally, you could use the same resources, the same farm resources, and get, what, 5 times more meat?
Definitely. Yeah, you totally could. And we choose not to.
Wow, that's mean.
Well, it's food with a mission. I mean,
there you go.
Yeah, I mean, we don't.
You're discriminating against the boys, though.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, so, thank goodness. You know, someone's got to. No,
there you go.
Joking.
Amen to that. Farm, food,
family, and
family.
Then future. Yeah.
Now, what the heck does the family have to do with what's inside the turkey?
Well, family, as we kind of see it and say it, you know, Diestel is our last name, and it's where the brand started, but it's literally just the start. You know, we feel like being family owned and operated, we get to instill the vision and the mission and the values that we want to uphold throughout our company. But it's really up to our team to really, you know, take those in and hold those, hold that every single day and work with that every single day. And so for us, you know, we kind of say we are a family within a family. I mean, we have some generations of folks that have worked for us. You know, their parents have worked for us. Now their kids are working for us and with us. And we feel like that generational knowledge is what makes us different as well. It's maybe not necessarily seen or contextualized from the outside, but it's so valuable because this is real. I mean, we have real folks, real families within families, farming all day, every day with our birds, or in our processing facilities, or on the phones talking with consumers. And, you know, we all kind of band together and say, hey, this is our mission and these are our goals. Let's all work together to get there. Now, you know, these larger conglomerates, you know, when you grow, you grow, and potentially you can't maintain that that core as tightly, but this is what we're committed to, is maintaining the core, both personally and professionally, you know, working shoulder to shoulder with them.
And that's the family. And then there's the future, which we will pick up after this break. But with it, I have a real tough question that I'd love to ask. And see if I can get a great giggle out of you, a nervous one maybe, but it'll be a fun question. This is The Food Chain, Michael Olson with Heidi Diestel and you.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Folks, welcome back. This is The Food Chain, Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What with Heidi Diestel. We're talking about food with its farmer's face on it, in this case, the Diestel Family Turkey brand. I don't know if you've ever had the opportunity to enjoy one for the holidays or for a big family meal, but my family certainly has for over the course of the years that I've lived here in California. And we're contrasting that with the industrial model. And getting a notion of what food with its farmer's face on it really means. And we were starting with the four F's of the Diestel family. One was the first was the food, right?
Farm.
The farm. It starts with the farm, then the food, then the family, then the future?
Mm-hmm, the future. Yeah, to summarize it, you know, we've got an agenda, and we want to advance the art of independent family farming. We want to move our industry forward in getting more food into the mouths of folks with farmers' faces on the package. We think that that's really important. We also want to be really critical and thoughtful of the way that we bring our products to market from, you know, a holistic perspective, an environmental perspective. We have an entire composting program that we run, so we take a huge majority of our organic waste and make a high-quality humus compost that ultimately ends up in our local CSA farmers' hands, and we've started a multitude of school gardens with it, and really like looking towards the future of what is food going to look like and doing our part to try and shape that landscape.
Well, one of the reasons I wanted to put the Diestel family on the table here for consideration is so that other farmers and other people and other businesses can look and see what you have done and how you are doing it, and perhaps they could pick that up as a model and think there is hope for the little people of the world to go into competition with those giant corporations. We can do this if we do it correctly. But one of the things that I see is in a family-operated business is, what do you do when you get in a fight?
We
all have families and we all have family fights, right? But when your family is the business.
Yeah. You know, here's the thing about family and family businesses. They can be detrimental to your success because people have emotions. And, you know, does one family member need this or need that, or is anyone pulling their weight here or there? And trust me, we've had all of these discussions. I always say, like, if we had a reality TV series, it would be, you know, it would be great. But here's the thing at the end of the day. We all know what's posted on our wall. We all know what our mission is. We all know what our values are. And it's kind of like our North Star. And so for us, we have taken a lot of time and energy to understand emotional intelligence, because sometimes we react to things, or we you know, react to one another in an emotionally charged way, right? We get in an argument, And we have to understand when we need to reel that in and say, okay, why are you saying what you're saying? What are your goals with whatever you're proposing? And how does that bring us closer to or further away from our Northern Star? And so it's not easy. We have a lot of discussions, a lot of arguments. But at the end of the day, our family understands the greater good. We understand what our mission is. And so we shake it off, we get back down to brass tacks, and we keep moving forward. And that's really the only way you can do it.
Really just let go of the emotions and get back to business, and perhaps things straighten themselves out a little bit better that way. But it is tough work, isn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely not easy. There's probably easier ways to go about things, but, you know, we're adamant about trying to bring really good quality food into the market, and that's our mission. And that's, you know, the thing is, our consumers keep us going too. We a few years ago created an online store, so you can go to our website and you can buy the majority of our products, not all of them, but the majority of them from our online store. And it's really neat. I mean, it's really rewarding. It's very humbling, because there are folks out there who are just searching for a better quality ground turkey, right? And they go to the grocery store, and everything, sure, is cheaper, but it also tastes cheaper, and it doesn't have the taste or the texture. And there are folks out there who know the difference, and they go, you know what, I'm buying this from you because it tastes so much better, or because it doesn't upset my stomach, or, you know, I mean, you look at all of these issues that we're having in people are talking about, right, whether it be a gluten intolerance or, you know, an increased inflammation, you know, diets that reduce inflammation, you know, elimination diets to figure out what's bothering someone's, you know, nasal, stomach, bloating, what have you. And really, we got to look back at the food that we're eating and how close is that? How close is that food? How processed is that food? We can have processed foods in moderation, but we're not talking about, you know, a whole bag of potato chips or highly processed cookies, right? We're talking about, you know, meat here, true, good quality meat.
You are a warrior, aren't you, of nutrition? You're a nutritionist. You're a trained nutritionist.
Well, my mom is a registered dietitian. I am not. My mom is. Okay. So we learn a lot from her. You know, during the low fat craze of the 90s, we're getting through that hump.
I wondered about that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we'll get through that one okay. So as a quest to transform how the nation feeds itself, and Lordy knows it's in need, where do we start there? Where do we start building that future of which you speak, Heidi Diestel?
Well, I think it starts with each independent person. You know, are these choices, and honestly, the dollars, the food dollars, right? With our highly commoditized food production, not just in protein, but across our entire grocery store, right? You hear nutritionists and you hear these folks and these diets, and they're like, hey, stay away from the middle of the grocery store because it's just highly processed junk food the majority of the time. Shop the perimeter, right? Okay, there's a reason for this. But it starts at home with each independent person and making a commitment to knowing the farmer, knowing the companies they're buying their food from. If they buy a private label, whatever label from their big box store, that's going to come from typically, that's going to come from a highly commoditized producer.
Whoever can grow the most for the least.
Exactly. So, yes, does it cost a dollar cheaper? Heck, it may cost $2 cheaper. But we're talking about a dollar to $2, and we have to be able to vote with our food dollars. We have to say, hey, I'm making the choice to put better quality food on the table for myself and for future generations. Therefore, I'm going to remain steadfast to these set of companies. Find your local CSA farmer, the guy that grows the produce right in your neck of the woods, and it's picked and then given to you like within 12 hours. That's going to have the highest nutrient density, not something that came from across the country. support that local CSA farmer. This is how we're going to slowly but surely change the food system. Now, is this attainable for everyone? Maybe, maybe not. There's arguments to be made on either side. But if you value it, then it is attainable. It's just like our own health and taking accountability for our own health. Every day, you're going to put, you know, one more step, one more foot in front of the other to eat better or to exercise or, you know, meditate, do something for yourself. And this is the same concept. So it starts at home. It starts with each independent consumer and truly making a commitment to where their food comes from and bringing back that art of independent farming. We need it so badly. And besides that, you're going to love the food better. It's going to taste better. It's going to keep you fuller. I mean, it's a no-brainer. I may be a little jaded, but it's a no-brainer.
And with respect to building that world, we have to find good teachers to teach farmers how to go out there and grow and compete and survive and prosper. Where do they start, Heidi Diestel?
Well, depending upon what type of farm,
I hold the Diestel family up because you do this with turkeys.
Yeah.
But can it not be done with tomatoes or watermelons or rutabagas or rhubarb or whatever?
Oh, it totally can. Yes. I think here's the thing. If you're wanting to get into this industry, tomatoes or a local bakery with really good wheat source, right? Really good grain source. I think you need to understand and you need to get real with yourself on what your mission is. What are you trying to accomplish? What are your goals? Write it down. And then go find like farmers, go find like bakeries, et cetera, that are doing it the way that you want to do it, right? And talk with them. You can find bakeries that are halfway across the country doing it and strike up a conversation. You know, let's learn from each other, let's lean on one another, and let's get this party started on the path to better, genuinely better quality food.
Do you talk to other groups?
We totally do, yeah. In fact, my brother Jason has worked with a variety of farmers, whether it be CSA farmers or turkey farmers, to compare and contrast. We've had some farmers work within our network of farms and help supplement our supply even. Some of these farmers were growing antibiotic-filled, you know, commodity programs, and they said, hey, Diestel, we don't want to do this. For all the reasons that you just said, we don't want to do this anymore. We want to have a farmer-to-farmer conversation, not a farmer-to-lawyer conversation. And it took a lot of time, and it took a lot of discussions because change is hard. But we were able to do it with some of these folks that really truly said, I'm changing my goals, I'm changing the way that I view, the way that I farm, and I want to understand part of the Diestel difference. And you know what? Quite frankly, we learned stuff from them as well, you know? So it's a really cool thing. It's a very challenging thing. But I think that it can be done, and I think that there should still be a choice. I don't think that farms such as ourselves that have scale but are very small should go out of business because we can't be $1.99 on shelf for you name it type of a program. We need to champion the value of our food, and we need to ask our grocers to do the same thing.
You're a farmer, a CEO, a wife, and a mother.
Yes.
How are you raising your child or children to be conscious of the food they eat? And I know you were living on a farm and everything, but how do you inculcate them with food savvy?
Yep. We talk to them. We show them. We take them to our local CSA farmer. They have sometimes like pick days where you can come and, you know, say they have like an enormous amount of basil and we can go and pick basil and we talk about it. We go to our local farmers markets. We bring them onto the ranch. We show them. I have, you know, very young kids. I've got a 4-year-old and a 6-month-old. But it's really about that discussion in the home, and we cook. We cook food when we eat food as a family, right? We sit down for dinner every night or most nights. And we cook our food from scratch. we have an appreciation that we are passing down to our generation, just as my parents did and just as my grandpa and my great-uncle Ernest did. There's a connection to the land, to the farm, and to the food that is unlike anything else. It's what nourishes us. It's what gives us the energy to move forward every single day. And I just think that it's oftentimes a bit overlooked in the scope of technology and materialism that, you know, can get us easily distracted. But my goodness, when you sit down and you have a caprese salad with fresh heirloom tomatoes, basil, you know, reduced balsamic, fresh mozzarella, it's a little bit of salt. I mean, it's like the whole world just comes together, and in that moment, it's just complete and utter perfection. And you only get that when you have a farmer on the other side who cares about the quality of the food that they're producing.
And the easiest way for a farmer to care about the food that they're producing is to know who they're producing it for.
Mm-hmm.
What you said about the dinner really struck me, because it seems like if there is a place to begin this revolution, it's at a family dinner, no matter how big or small the family is. But
Yep. Preparing
a meal and sitting down and turning off the television.
Yes.
And turning off the handheld devices and shutting everything off except each other and the food before you is a great place to start building this new world that we in so need of.
Definitely. Yeah.
And so I've decided that I'm going to give you permission to use Michael Olson's third law of the food chain.
Oh, fantastic.
And that is, cheap food isn't.
Very well stated. Very well stated. Thank you. We'll have to use that and tag you back.
Heidi Diestel, so much fun. Thank you so much for joining us. And thank you for bringing so many wonderful turkeys into our turkey world.
Oh, thank you so much, and thank you for valuing what we have to say.
You bet. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you all for tuning in. And remember Michael Olson's second law of the food chain. The farther we go from the source of our food, the less control we have over what's in our food.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.